Hello and thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Jason Okowski from Creatio. Now, Jason, I've got a short and easy question for you, but it's probably a really difficult answer. Why do projects fail?
Thanks for having me, Cliff. And yeah, you know, important question today, especially as things are moving faster than ever, as cycles are moving faster than ever, customer expectations are changing. We're all moving at the speed of AI. So it's so important to make sure that we get our implementations right and that we examine the reasons at which we're not able to sometimes move fast enough during implementation and why some of the, you know, business moves on and changes while we're still implementing all the requirements that we spent all this time uncovering.
I mean, projects have always failed. I've been a computer, I always say this on these podcasts, I've been a computer weekly a very long time, 25 years at least. And when I previously joined the magazine, this is in 1998, we were talking about the Y2K project. And then after that, we were talking about project failures. This was enterprise systems, like the people were implementing SAP and Oracle to replace the legacy systems that had a Y2K problem in some cases, not in all cases, but those big transformational projects were falling down quite regularly. And it's, I know we've gone through various iterations and methodologies to where we are today, but projects are still failing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And luckily, hey, we all made it through Y2K, right? Unscathed, luckily, thanks to a lot of efforts. But yeah, I mean, despite, you know, my youthful demeanor, I've been through all sorts of these phases and cycles, whether it's across ERP, HR systems, CRM systems. And, you know, certainly there have been some high profile, you know, straight up failures through the years where, you know, somebody literally went live and something fell over and maybe you couldn't ship the product and they didn't, you know, they weren't aware of kind of what was in the supply chain and inventory and these things. I think those are fewer and far between. What I see more often is that the project fails to deliver the impact that it really needed to have in the business, right? And we've all seen the various stats, depending on who you quote, that can be upwards of 70, 75% of all projects can fail to deliver that sort of impact. And I think if you unpack that a little bit, the real reason behind that is, yes, we went live. We went live with something and, you know, data's moving and, you know, we're monitoring the system with dashboards, but we never really solved the needs of the business. We never really got the workflows right. And so over time, work starts to happen outside of these systems that we spent so much time and money implementing. And I'm sure you've seen that as well, right? You have the temporary workaround that, you know, becomes permanent. You've got this, you know, side sheet, the spreadsheet that people start to rely on, and pretty soon they can't find the latest and greatest version of that. And, you know, so I think these are the real indicators of failure within an organization. So pretty soon the work happens outside the system.
Okay, let's pause that thought for a second. I just want to go back a little bit. One of the things that I've written about, and it's the industry's, you know, appetite almost, or what seems to happen, a trend, is that the projects are oversold and then underdeliver. And I think, you know, I don't want to mention AI so early in the conversation, but it seems to be happening with that as well. But put that aside for one moment. Projects seem to do a lot, seem to promise a lot, and they fail to deliver on those expectations. And I think the likes of the Foresters and the Gartners would say they fail to have a return on investment or a reasonable return on investment. I mean, eventually they do. I mean, all these projects eventually work themselves out. And I think you were talking about how they work themselves out. But there is this sense of being oversold and under-delivering, which I'd like your thoughts on.
Yeah, I mean, I think the technology holds so much promise, but the execution is where it really, you know, makes the difference. And so you know, whether you point at your implementation methodology and your ability to move fast enough, whether you point at the tool itself and can the tool be implemented in a fast enough way to really kind of capture it. You know, I think one of the biggest things that we see is that there's a lot of capability across a lot of tools out there, but what's really right for your business? What's going to help your business move forward? What's going to unlock your secret sauce, your superpowers? What's going to help you, you know, see around the corner, meet your customer needs, beat your competitor, you know, to market in certain areas? And a lot of times we get bogged down in the implementation, spending so long on iteration around requirements, you know, with a group of people. And pretty soon you're straying, you know, rather far from the original vision or the mission, and you can't keep pace and speed with what's happening and changing with the business while you're doing all of this heavy lifting. And so the capability might be there in the product, but really the ability to move fast enough and get that product into the hands of the people, get that platform, that tool, that system into the hands of the people that need it, I think makes the biggest difference.
I mean, going back to what you were saying about people doing workarounds, and I'm thinking aloud here, but so excuse me if I get it totally wrong, but that does suggest that when people are doing a formal specification, they are not talking to the right people. Someone may have been doing a workaround all along. You know, they may say, well, I've always done it this way because, you know, whatever processes we had in the past always required this. But no one ever asked me how I actually do this. You know, you just looked at the software and how I use the software rather than how I actually do this process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that absolutely happens at times. You know, I mean, I think there's, you know, when we talked about earlier, people, process, technology, right? You got to have the right people engaged from a process perspective. You know, you have to have the right governance around your implementation process. One of the things I see, though, is even when you get the right people in the room and you're going through this particular process, you can have the most perfect process in the world, but until people actually see it and they get their eyes on what it is that you're going to deliver, even it could be requirements that they gave you, but when they see them in the light of day and they see them built out, then they suddenly realize that they need something that's a little different than that, that doesn't actually mirror exactly how we're doing it today. I was just talking to a very large consulting company just last week, and they were, you know, here in 2026, this is, you know, still a problem. And so I think the faster you can have them see something, whether it's prototyping or an MVP type concept, then they can get their hands on it and they can figure out, does this really work for how the business actually runs today?
I mean, just for our listeners and readers, what is an MVP?
Yeah, so minimum viable product, right? And, you know, if you think about the scale of, you know, going live with complete big bang, you know, everything, every product, every module all at once, on, you know, the other side of that spectrum would be MVP, where you're finding, you know, where's the first place, the biggest point of pain in the business, the best opportunity for me to start, and then iterate and add continuous value to the business over time. And that flexibility can allow you to add instant value and then iterate.
I mean, I want to bring up the, because you did mention the sort of big bang approach and the response to the big bang approach failing. And this was what I started talking about at the beginning with these SAP and Oracle Project Enterprise systems that went live, you press the big button, and a few weeks later, everything, you know, you don't get your invoices or your payroll doesn't quite work, you know, and as well as it should. Now, you know, the response to that was these agile methodologies. And that is where people do get involved very early on. And depending on the methodology, you have sort of, you know, very fast sprints, very fast iterative cycles. People do see the product evolve. But, I mean, that's been around for a long time. And yet, and I guess it's the way of doing things today. Not everyone does it, but it's definitely the way of doing things.
Yeah.
Yet things are still going wrong, right?
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things probably to unpack there. One, you know, I think It matters if you're talking about like the initial implementation versus the subsequent updates, and releases and iterations that come over time. One of the things that a lot of us still see in the industry, really, for the initial implementation is frankly a bit of like WAGIL, right? A bit of waterfall still, because you have to have some set of scope and requirements and a goal that you want to meet, and then agile iterations, within there. And so, we see this kind of for the first implement for the first phase or wave. And then we see an agile approach to the iterations around there with those cycles of business requirements and delivery. But I think, even in that, even if you are following agile, until folks have an opportunity to really see what it is that you're delivering, and this is where I think things like prototyping play such a big role, where you can prototype in a way that allows them to touch and feel and see how this workflow is actually going to work, or how this, UI is actually going to work for their teams and their business. Or now in the world of AI, right? How, where is the agent going to play a role in this human plus agent, workflow that we may have going on? What's the part that they're going to own? I think that's when folks really start to realize and uncover gaps that might not have ordinarily been uncovered until post go live, right? And then where they start impacting the business.
Yes, I mean, I wonder if we are prepared for the project management that agentic AI will lead to and will require, in fact, because we're still not getting the, I'm not saying they're betas, they're very complicated products, but the products are complicated. You tend to buy them from, ISVs, and they kind of know this is exactly what the product is supposed to do. If you implement it this way, this is how it works. And you still have change management issues, even with that, and even with the consulting firms coming in and helping you out. And now we have this Pandora's box of amazing things that you can do. And it's entirely up to you how you weave these things together. This is agentic AI. And it's not just that, it's the fact that, yeah, people have to come along on that journey. And part of the job that they do is evolving because of what the agents are doing.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, and this is the new emerging skill, right? And in a sense, as long as you have a platform that's flexible enough, then, from an agentic AI perspective, the technology is not always the limiting factor. It's what can you do with it? What are you going to envision? How are you going to transform this workflow, this process? How are you going to insert the agent in a way that allows the human to focus on the things that they're best at and unlock more time for your people to be, more strategic or leverage, high stakes decisions or evaluations that they need to make, while the AI can handle, the everyday tasks and the things that take more and more time from them and bring more operational efficiency to this. And then together, that's what allows you to have big impact. But, this is the emerging role of being able to understand enough of what the technology can do, but stay close enough to the business to understand the business process, the business operations, to really feel that pain, and then to be able to solve for that pain.
I mean, I've just had a thought. Again, it's another random thought, but I mean, does the minimum viable product still apply? And the reason I asked this question is that there are plenty of pilot projects that fail to move beyond pilot stage within AI, the AI context. AI projects work really well when they're small, and when you start scaling, they don't deliver the ROI. Lots of things tend to go wrong at that stage. And there's numerous pieces of research that show that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you need to look at the two different aspects or multiple aspects of AI. But I think a lot of folks started out with assistive AI at first, right? Using AI as an assistant, a co-pilot, helping them, do something better, faster, write faster, deliver more drafts, all that sort of stuff. And I think that there's been some, certainly some marginal value there in terms of operational improvements. But the big unlock, as you said, is getting, more of these agentic pilots from pilot mode out into production. And therein, I think, you really need to start with the workflows that makes sense, and the workflows where you have the biggest opportunity to really achieve that goal of the human and the agent working together. Where's the biggest pain, right? Solve for that. And that, in a sense, becomes, you know, your MVP, right? Your first version of this that you then iterate from there. And I think one of the traps that people fall into is maybe going too large with their scope. You know, I know one of the things that we're certainly looking at is, you know, autonomous agents to run certain processes within industries with a deep industry focus, right? Because that's where you get, you know, the steps and the impact, right, for the business around there. So I think those are some great places to start. So in a sense, this is the new version of the MVP, where you're finding the right place to start for the business to bring all of this together. I think oftentimes, unfortunately, folks are maybe blocked from doing that because of their technology. Sometimes the technology is maybe not, you know, flexible enough, or they're stuck on old versions or different things like that. So we see some of those blockers as well, where they can't get the agent to work with the existing systems of record to be this complete kind of system of execution today. And that's another reason why things don't end up getting out of pilot, because they start piloting, how are these things going to work together? And at the end of the day, they're not able to get there yet.
Okay, Jason, well, final thoughts. What would be your advice to IT decision makers who are the sort of readers of Computer Weekly and who listen to this podcast in terms of, well, avoiding, I don't want to say avoiding failure, but reducing the likelihood that your project won't deliver on expectations?
Yeah, I think we used to talk about this in the concepts of also kind of future-proofing your systems, right? You've got your initial implementation and you have a goal to meet, and you're trying to have a system that's going to last for, you know, 3, 5+ years. I think we need to think in a much more flexible mode now, and we need to make sure that we have our platforms and systems in place that allow us to have that sort of flexibility. I think we need to be planning for humans and agents to work together on these key systems. And I think that the closer we can move that to the business, then we're going to deliver highest business impact throughout this process.
Well, Jason, thank you ever so much for joining me today. And thank you very much for tuning in. Goodbye.